soul won't to its wasted and hateful road. They shall always be in thrall. They shall slaughter doves above all. They shall smite themselves, jumping in bed.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstuds show, the radio show where I talk about comics. Today we have a very special show lined up. I've got a whole slew of guests, so this should be interesting. My guests are Dave Roman, Larry Martyr, Tara McPherson, and Indigo. Now, I forgot to check and make sure I have your name pronounced. Indigo Kelly?
Calais.
Yep. There we go. Yep. And I just thought I'd mention the song we just heard was Secrets Needing Secrets from Extravagant Bachelor. It's some random CD that got sent to me in the mail, and I enjoyed it. So there we go. So sometimes it's complicated having four people on the phone together in an interview. Some of you may be more quiet, some may be louder, so I just say, to talk a little louder. It's just because different phones have different levels, and, you know, unfortunately, the multinational corporations of phone people don't make us all sound the same. So that's the way it rolls. So do I have you all there? Tara, hello?
Hi.
Hi. Larry, you're there?
I'm here. Hello.
Hello. And Dave, I gotcha?
Yep.
Excellent. So there we go. We have everyone here. We're done. So I guess we'll start out with Indigo. Why don't you tell us about Stumptown? All three of the artists we have on the phone here are... special guest at Stumptown next, or this month in Portland. I like to think of Vancouver's unofficial sister city, because I feel like we got more in common with Portland than Seattle. Go to Seattle and it's like this, it's more city feeling than Portland's more of a community.
Yeah, we still like to think of ourselves as a small city. Not sure if we really are anymore, but so Stumptown is, well, it's coming up at the end of this month. It's April 26th and 27th. It's the first time we've been back in the spring. The very first show we did was in June, and after that we were in a fall schedule for the last 3 years. And this year we are in April again. And it's basically, it's the idea to do a show in the first place was, it basically came out of a number of us local artists about 5 years ago. We're talking about exhibiting at another local show that comes around every, like, twice a year or so, every 6 months. And one of the issues that we always had exhibiting at that show is that there weren't a lot of tables devoted to artists and creators. So a lot of us, you know, were web cartoonists and aspiring comics creators, but there just wasn't table space for all of us at this one show. And so somebody had the brilliant notion to just start our own, and so we did. And it was a very small show the first year. It was just 22 tables in a church, and it was all local creators. There was one retailer present, one publisher, Top Shelf, was there the first year. And it's just grown every year since then. And it's always surprising to see how much support there is for a show like this in the area. But it's always really nice to see it, too.
Well, Portland's kind of become a cartoonist. Yeah, I can't speak today. I'm sorry, people. I've been in school nonstop lately. A cartoonist mecca.
It has, I know. I mean, it's great. It's exciting to see it. I don't know why that is. Somebody suggested at one point that it was because the weather here is always so dismal that it just encourages people to sit inside and draw all day, which I could see that. Right? That could very well be.
Comics is the isolating medium.
It's for the lonely people.
Yeah. The wonderful loony people. We love them all. Now, what are some of the special events you have planned for Stumptown?
Well, The whole weekend we have three panel rooms set up on Saturday. We have spotlights with each of our special guests. They're going to have about 45 minutes to an hour to talk about themselves and their work and the kinds of comics they like and the kinds of comics they make. We're also going to have one of the things that we did last year that was really, really popular was this Dr. Sketchy's live drawing session. Have you heard of these?
They have them in Vancouver. I don't know if they're still happening because they weren't very popular, but basically it's a life drawing with a burlesque model.
Exactly. It's life drawing with burlesque models, people who know how to do interesting poses, and it's a really flashy kind of thing. And so we're going to have them back again this year, which is exciting.
And I think Molly Crabapple started that.
So what was that?
Molly Crabapple in New York was the one that...
Yes.
Yeah, she's a friend of mine.
Is she?
Mm-hmm.
And a swell artiste.
She's like 2 blocks from my studio.
So you get that all the time. So then on Sunday, one of our local art colleges, Pacific Northwest College of Art, is going to be putting together basically a full day's curriculum for us of workshops on creating comics, creating graphic novels, publishing comics, putting your comics online. It's just a really great program, and it's not, you know, it's nothing that you have to do, like, participate in the whole day. You can just drop in for, you know, an hour for one of the sessions if you're interested. And then we always have the after party with the art battle.
What is the art battle? I didn't stick around long enough to check it out last year. I ducked off to the Fantagraphics Top Shelf Drinkathon.
Yeah, the art battle is kind of a cross between, I'd say it's like a cross between like win, lose, or draw, and I don't know, American Gladiators or something. It's not like full contact, but it's definitely a lot more high energy.
I was seeing people getting like really hyped up and revved up for it. I'm like, how, you know, most comic affairs I've been to, it's been pretty sedate. Everyone's casual. Usually, like, you know, it's more of a melancholy atmosphere than a teardown.
You've got two easels, two pads of paper, and usually teams, two teams of four or five cartoonists competing against each other for points. And all of the challenges are based on suggestions from the audience. So, like, they might have to draw a battle across two pages where, you know, one team gets an army of mime hippopotami, and the other team has an army of, you know, paraplegic nuns or something. And they have to come up with, you know, ways that they would fight each other. And then the results are all based on audience response.
So this is kind of like seeing an improv comedy troupe, but awesome.
Yes.
High pressure.
But with drawing.
And I know for a lot of cartoonists, it can be pretty pressuring to have to perform on demand like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they seem to enjoy it, though. I can't say that I've really participated in it myself, but I like watching them.
Well, this time I'll make sure to stick around instead of disappearing into a bottle of booze. So each of you are going to be doing one of those room sessions. So maybe you can tell us each what you're doing at Stumptown for your little chats with folks and stuff. Larry?
Sure. This is going to be the first convention that I've done without me being attached to another comic book company or a toy company or whatever in almost 15 years. And so this is my big return to comics. And so my presentation is going to be about Bean World, where it came from, where it went, and where it's going. And I will be talking about how I originally came up with it, what my influences are. And for those people that have heard of Bean World, which seems to be everybody, but nobody's actually read it because the books themselves have been out of print for a little while, and this is my big return to comics. And so I will be giving a talk showing exactly how the Bean World works, because the Bean World isn't a place, it's a process. And the Bean World is an internal construction that the reader builds in his or her own mind, and with an ecological base. It's about a bunch of characters who believe that they are in the center of a perfect world, and they maintain their environment, and things are always going wrong, and they're always trying to fix it. And the more they try to fix it, the worse it gets.
I have read Bean World. I am one of those few, I guess, that sounds like, and it's fantastic. It's one of the most, I guess, surreal comics. One aspect, and I think Scott McCloud went off about the wonderfulness in understanding comics. So if you can track down some Bean Worlds, highly recommend checking it out.
Well, they'll be there at Stumptown.
And you'll be giving out the Bean World figures?
I will be giving out Bean World action figures, including revealing the latest model, which I cannot say on the air yet, but you'll have to come and see it. But it's an actual, genuine, new Bean World action figure model.
Uh-oh. What?
But nobody should get all that excited. They're just little beans with eyes painted on them.
So it won't fall apart like the McFarlane toys?
No. They're totally organic.
The only biodegradable
except for the ink.
Dave, what do you got planned?
I'm just going to go to Larry's panel, and I'll see what he does and just change the names and the books. I actually have no idea what I'm doing, to be honest. I assume that I'm doing a lot of different panels for in the next couple of weeks for Nickelodeon.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know, there's an artist named Arsa Koryak.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Love him.
Yes, sorry. He's great. And he's, I don't know if he wants to take full credit for creating this concept, but he does these sort of traveling slideshows where he takes comic panels, chops them up, and then reads them out loud, and does a sort of like interactive comics reading experience. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing a lot of that with Arsa Koryak and Nickelodeon Magazine cartoonists. So I'll probably, you know, pull from that some of the stuff that we've been doing and show some of that at Stumptown and throw in a few panels of my own comics.
Now they do
comics as well.
At Stumptown last year, you actually had a comic reading too, I think on the Friday night. I missed it because, unfortunately, traveling from Vancouver, it's quite the distance.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, at one of the local shops, Guapo Comics, they host a mini comics reading on Friday night, the night before the Comics Fest begins, and they have a big party there for that.
Lots of beer.
And that's happening again this year too.
And Tara, what do you got planned for your panel?
Well, every time I do a panel, I never have a set agenda. So, honestly, I really love to do the Q&As at the end. I'll probably just talk about, hopefully I can do, a slideshow type of thing. I don't know if they'll have that set up.
A little PowerPoint.
Yeah, it's always nice to kind of, when you're speaking about work, be able to show an example at the same time. I'll just talk about my work and kind of, because I don't work specifically in comics, it kind of bridges between fine art and some commercial work in comics, and just kind of talk about that stuff. I just finished a big solo show at Jonathan Levine Gallery, and I'm back to I have this amazing comic that I had started but got put on hold when I started working on my solo show, and so I'm starting back on that, and that's I think it's going to turn out to be about a 100-page graphic novel put out by Vertigo and
fully painted
by Stephen T. Siegel.
Oh, Steve, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's an amazing writer. And that's called Donor. And so I'm back to working on that. I mean, I won't even be done with it until early next year. But it's all painted and a lot of work, but a lot of fun. And I'm excited to get back on that.
I'm just curious, Tara, do you know, is that going to be serialized first, or is that just coming out straight as a graphic novel?
Just as a graphic novel.
Oh, cool.
Nothing gets serialized anymore, it seems like.
Well, that's actually a huge question that goes on in the industry right now. I was at Comics Pro, it's a comic book retailer, meeting a couple weeks ago, and nobody serializes anything anymore, and yet periodical entertainment always sort of kept the comic book stores open. So I honestly believe, and I know this is getting a little technical, but I believe that will be the major conversation over the next year. Is there a future in periodical comics at all? I know I'm not working in them anymore,
mm-hmm.
but it'd be very interesting to see where all that goes.
I know that it seems for mainstream publishers it's more of an ongoing option, but I know that with when Chester Brown re-released Ed the Happy Clown as separate issues, that was basically a favor to Chester. It didn't really sell at all.
Yeah.
And I mean, Chester Brown's, arguably one of the greatest cartoonists around. So that's kind of in the independent industry, kind of gives you an idea. And Love and Rockets recently stopped releasing separate issues. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I know with Ed the Happy Clown specifically, I saw that they were coming out with the reissues of those old issues, and honestly, my first thought was, wow, when are they going to come out with a reprint of the graphic novel? I personally prefer to read a full book rather than having to go back every month or two and
the sad
see
part,
if the new issues come out yet.
It's only half
I
the story.
I do as well.
Yeah, and this is the first time I'm working on something that's closer to 250 to 300 pages. It's amazing. Every 22 pages, there's just this instinct that kicks in that says you got to start wrapping it up, mm-hmm. and I don't, and it's really liberating.
Now, all of you, one thing I found interesting with the having the three of you on is you're all involved in other stuff other than comics, like strictly making comics, but comics seem to draw you back. Is that a good way of kind of summing up a little bit? Because, I mean, Larry, you were, for lack of a better term, an executive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have been a business person all of my life. I spent 20 years in advertising, and I ran Image Comics for a while, and I ran McFarlane Toys for a while. But my love, my true passion is Bean World. And so that is the comic that it's really the only comic I ever wanted to work on. So I sometimes have to work in order to support my art, and mm-hmm. I don't mind doing that at all.
How about you, Tara? What draws you back into doing comics? Because your posters are quite No, and I mean, I've got the Kraftwerk one at home that I stole from a Tower Records in Seattle.
I've always loved comics, and it, you know, I mean, when I went to art school, I pretty much, you know, my main focus was, you know, I thought, like, I want to be a painter. And then so many other things happen, you know, that evolve from being an artist. And I got into doing rock posters, which was unexpected. And then I got into doing comics, which, you know, was unexpected as well. And just a great path. I mean, my editor, Shelley Bond at Vertigo, had seen my posters and read an interview or something like that and had emailed me about doing covers. And that to me was fantastic. You know, at the time it was perfect and so much fun to do and to work on. And you know, a lot of stuff isn't painted as well. So, you know, for me, it was really a great opportunity to be able to bring painting back to the medium.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, honestly, I really, when I was younger, I wanted to do comics, and then I kind of got out of it. And then when I got asked, it was actually Ad House Books did Project Superior and asked me to do a 4-page comic in that. And that was my first real comic that I ever did. And it was really fun. And it just, like, kind of opened the floodgates. And then I started getting offers. And, you know, my editor was off, you know, we were talking. She's like, you know, would you ever want to do one with us? And you know, it's great. And I did the Fables, 1001 Nights of Snowfall. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think that was like a 12-page story. And then they offered me, you know, my own graphic novel, and it's really fun, and I really enjoy doing it. And but, you know, part of, like, entertaining myself as an artist is kind of like switching between things. And so I find that, you know, I'll do a poster and then, you know, do a painting and then comics and, you know, go back to, like, doing a drawing. And it's nice to keep it all varied for me. And so, you know, coming off of this show that just finished, I'm really excited to get back into working on Donor.
Does that kind of help, like, when you do shows and get out in the public, kind of to, you know, just get your energy back up?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Dave, we got you there?
Sure.
There, okay. What kind of, because you are an editor at Nickelodeon, mm-hmm. at the I guess the comics magazine, like, I'm not too sure, I don't get it in Canada.
I think it's a more fairly described as this. It's a humor magazine,
mm-hmm.
sort of in the tradition of Mad Magazine, with a little bit of celebrity content thrown in there. A few, like, fun facts and, like, you know, bizarre but true kind of material. And then every issue has a pretty amazing comic section that ranges from about 8 to 12 pages.
I got to say, it's one of the most... It bugs me that I can't get it, because you get, like, Dave Mazzucchelli in there, you got Ivan Brunetti, you get Dave Cooper, Johnny Ryan, the list goes on. It's astounding.
Yeah, we've been really fortunate to work with, you know, tons of amazing cartoonists.
And doing comics for kids, no less.
On the Fantagraphics or Drawing Quarterly or, you know, any of the major alternative comics. You know, I think that's sort of like our little bubble is, like, we tend to work with a lot of people who work in the sort of indie underground comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So what draws you back into at night when you're doing your
well,
webcomics?
Well, I mean, it's 24/7, really. I eat, sleep, you know, do everything comics. I went to school for comics. I graduated and got my job. You know, I started working at Nickelodeon. I was interning at DC Comics while I was in school, and that led to me getting the job at Nickelodeon while I was still in school as well. So by the time I graduated with a diploma in cartooning, I was already helping edit comics. And that's, you know, most of what I do at Nickelodeon Magazine is comics. I do occasionally work on other content, but by and large, it's all comics editing. So there's nothing pulling me away from comics except other comics.
Now, what kind of stuff are you all going to have available at the con? Like, Larry, you'd mentioned the Bean World action figures.
I'll have books. I'll probably have a bunch of handmade things, and if the creek don't rise and the bridge don't wash out, I'll probably have a poster or two.
Nice. And you said this is your first convention
solo. This is my first real convention, is Larry Martyr, the guy that does Bean World, with no responsibilities.
Nice.
For anything else in almost 20 years.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting my hands on a Bean World action figure. Tara, you probably have a fair amount of prints and stuff, I'm presuming.
Yeah, I have lots and lots of stuff that I'll probably bring. I'll have a good selection of posters and art prints, and I usually bring drawings. And I have my art book that was put out by Dark Horse. I'll have that, and I'll probably have the Fables graphic novel with me, and buttons and stickers and toys. And I do a lot of stuff with Kid Robot, and so I should have some things left from them, and yeah, all kinds of fun stuff.
Nice. Do you do conventions very often?
Yeah, I do, actually. And also, there's another thing that I'm involved in is put on by the American Poster Institute, and that's called Flatstock. And those are like 2-3, maybe even 4 times a year now. I just got back from that about a week ago from, that was in Austin, held during South by Southwest. So in addition to doing, I've been asked more recently to be a guest at a lot of comic conventions, but I also do the poster, the rock poster conventions too, which are really fun and, you know, kind of a different world, but very parallel with comics. So yeah, it's fun.
I remember I went to SPX and, you know, buying masses of stuff for myself, and luckily someone had some nice posters there, so I was able to get away with getting my girlfriend something there without having to go elsewhere, so... It's nice to have it's neat to see the new art that's coming out through the rock posters.
Yeah, there's some amazing, amazing artists.
Dave, what are you going to have?
I will have quite an assortment of mini comics and graphic novels that I've worked on. Mostly Teen Boat and Astronaut Elementary and Jaxie Pock and the Quick and Forbidden. And I also have the Agnes Quill book that I did for Slave Labor. And copies of Life Meter Comics, which is an anthology of video game-related comics and art that I edit.
Do you ever stop?
No. I was actually hospitalized just last week because I was helping organize a convention here in the city, and kind of right up until the minute it started, I was working on it, and then finally had to go to the ER. And still didn't kill me, so I'm back to working on comics again.
So. So people be nice at Stumptown.
Yeah, I assume it'll be a little bit more low key than the New York Comic Con coming up.
Yeah.
Do you need us to set up a bubble for you?
Sure. Yeah.
How about
netting, maybe?
A big beanbag chair just to recline and relax.
Ah.
Now, what is it about comics that everyone loves? I'm trying to really have some generic questions where we can have something to throw in instead of being too specific with each person. What comics got you into comics? Maybe let's throw in something a little bit like that, a little influence. Whoever wants to go first.
I'll go first because I'm the oldest, I guess. for me, honestly, it was the really dumb Superman comics in the 1950s with Red Kryptonite and all of that, and Batman fighting aliens. And then I was lucky enough when I got a little bit older, that really my basic adolescence, early adolescence, was when the Marvel Comics revolution happened in the early 60s. And so I grew up along. I was 10 years old when Fantastic Four number one came out. I was 12 years old when in 1963, which was one of the most amazing years in comics, And then I was 18 years old when the Underground Comics Revolution started, and I read my first Zap comics and my first Underground. So I really I really grew up right along with comic books, and I was sort of the perfect age for everything as it was happening, and I was very fortunate in that sense.
Anyone else want to go jump in?
Yeah, for me, the first comic book I remember reading was an issue of Godzilla, King of the Monsters. I was probably 3 or 4. But I think the ones that like really put me over the top to wanting to be involved, to seeing that I really could be involved with creating comics and just being a part of comics as an idea, was actually in the mid-80s, the black and white explosion. Mm-hmm. After Ninja Turtles came out, and I got an issue of Cynical Man and got introduced to Matt Fiesel's work. And then I started finding out about all the mini comics, and honestly, Larry Beanworld was a huge influence on me at that point, and still is. And just really getting involved and seeing all of the really great personal, unique vision that were coming out in the 80s was a really big turning point for me.
80s was a very creative time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tara?
For me, I guess originally it got into like Sandman and Preacher, and I remember really liking Strangers in Paradise, and those are the kind of things that I read a lot of then. And when I was younger, like before I went to art school, I managed this Japanese animation, like a toy store, and we had a lot of Japanese stuff that I really liked too, that got me into kind of deeper into comics. And yeah, it's really cool stuff, but you know, oddly enough, a lot of Vertigo titles, so it's kind of really cool for me to be working for them now, because I did read a lot of their publication, you know, the titles when I was like in my early 20s.
They had the best superhero comics, Vertigo. I got to say, their Animal Man was fantastic.
Well, that was, yeah, that's Grant Morrison when it was at its height.
Well,
yeah.
Such cool stuff. And mm-hmm. I mean, and now, I don't know, I'm really obsessed with Jeffrey Brown.
His new book just came out yesterday.
Oh, really?
From Touchstone Books, from an actual book publisher.
I love his stuff.
He's so fantastic.
You know,
my one complaint... The book started falling apart. The glue wasn't holding. It was like,
oh.
So you should still read it. It's fantastic. It's kind of surprised me because it's a mainstream book publisher, and everyone should still buy the book because it's fantastic. It's, you know, Jeffrey Brown's latest autobio stuff. But it just surprised me that like Simon & Schuster didn't really investigate the glue.
Yeah. Everybody gets a bad batch of glue sometimes.
Oh, the jokes I could make. What are some fun convention experiences you folks have had? Since it's going to be a convention, I'll keep it on the convention.
I actually had somebody come up to me with a copy of my book where the glue had fallen off, and like the whole binding had fallen apart, and still asked me to sign it.
Aww.
And I gave her a new copy, because I was like, oh my god.
That's good.
We produce such crap.
At San Diego Comic-Con this last year, someone came up and they'd gotten a tattoo of one of my drawings and an art print that I'd done. And then he asked me to sign his arm, and I kind of did it reluctantly, like, okay. And the next day he came back with it tattooed on it. That was pretty crazy. That was like the craziest thing ever.
I've had that exact same tattoo experience, and it always freaks me out because
you're signing and you're like, oh my god.
Well, I'm like, you know, my reaction is, well, you're making a bigger commitment to my characters than I am. I could walk away from them tomorrow, and you're going to have this on your body for the rest of your life. I mean, it's a very, very strange experience, but it's very cool. I mean, it's obviously the ultimate compliment.
Yeah, definitely. Oh my gosh.
It'll be fun explaining it to their kids when they're or grandkids when they're 80. Anyone else have any fun convention times?
I don't think I've done enough conventions to, like, as an exhibitor or anything, to have any fun convention stories like that.
Conventions are just fun in general.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think shows like Stumptown, which, you know, I haven't been to yet, but everything that I've heard, you know, equates it to something like the Small Press Expo or the Alternative Press Expo or the Mocha Art Fest, which, you know, the artist-centric conventions just tend to be the most entertaining and fun for me as an artist, like, just because it's such a great time to, you know, to expose yourself to so many other artists and get to know artists on a more one-to-one basis. And, you know, so many cartoonists spend so much time in their studios by themselves, and then you go to a convention like Mocha or Stumptown where you get to, you know, interact with all these other artists that you're fans of and really get to meet them and hang out with them and see, you know, compare notes. And it's, you know, I never get tired of it.
I have to agree with that. The most fun that happens at a convention as a professional is interacting with other professionals and people that you can tell someday are going to be professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And that really come up and ask really interesting questions, and I always find that really a lot of fun.
Well, you must have had some experiences where, like, you'd get a young guy, because you've been around a while in the comic scene, and, you know, it's, you know, kind of see that where this person's coming from, starting out, and then kind of see that transition where 5-10 years later, all of a sudden they're...
Oh, that happens to me all the time. I won't drop any names or anything, but even some guests at Stumptown have come up to me and said, you know, when I go up and introduce myself, and I have really not have any idea if they know who I am or not, because I've sort of been out of it for a while, and they'll say, oh, I know you. You talked to me when I was 14. You were so nice to me. You treated me like an adult. And I always treat everybody. I always treat all kids like adults if they come up and ask, you know, good questions.
Well, you know, the kids are getting into comics are more mature, I think. At least that's my excuse. I'm going to do a quick song break. Now, Indigo, do you have to take off, or are you going to stick around with us?
I do need to get going. I do want to say really quickly, though, that anybody who wants any more information about the Stumptown Comics Fest as it's coming up, our website is www.stumptowncomics.com, and that has full lists of schedules of events, not just for the Comics Fest itself, but also we were lucky enough this month to have the mayor declare April as Comics Month here in Portland. So we have a huge schedule of events pertaining to that on the website as well. So at StumptownComics.com, and the fest is coming up at the end of April.
There we go. So just please hold, folks, and I'm just going to play a quick song, and then we'll come right back. CITR 101.9 FM, this is Inkstuts.
With my fights and bad luck.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. Next week, my guest will be Dylan Williams, the publisher of Sparkplug, another folk that will be at Stumptown, one of my favorite little publishers. They do a lot of fantastic stuff. Week after that, I'll be playing my epic interview with Gary Panter. The man sat on the phone with me for 2 hours. And,
wow.
It was quite something, and I think everyone's really going to be blown away by it. He's fantastic. And week after that will be hopefully Brennan Graham, since he's up in Vancouver all the time, and I'll be on my road down to Stumptown when that is supposed to be me on the radio. Hopefully I'll be able to sit with him and yak with him. So, some good stuff coming up. Now, it's kind of hard for me doing an interview with a lot of people because each of you I could sit and do an hour with because you all have a bunch of stuff to talk about. So I kind of feel bad, like I'm being really generic, but please, I want to have you again. The guests today, if you're listening, Larry Martyr, Dave Roman, and Tara McPherson, all completely different comics folk. You're all in comics, but completely different of what kind of comics you do.
Quite true.
Now, I guess I'll start out. A couple more generic questions. Like I say, I'm being bland and generic. But what kind of stuff have you seen at conventions that's really like kind of caught your eye and influenced you as far as like your own comics work? Larry?
Oh, I would say the most interesting person to me over the last couple of years has been James Kochalka. I really, you know, because we're both doing things that are deliberately cute, and yet we're both really sort of pushing the cute idiom in a ironic way.
Mm-hmm. He loves the beauty, the cutie beauty.
Yeah. And that's in recent years, yeah.
How about either of you two, Dave?
Well, the most obvious answer would probably be my wife, because we actually met at a convention where I bought her mini comics, and then following, you know, up after the fact and hanging out and then collaborating on projects together and eventually getting married. So Raina Telgemeier is the cartoonist.
And she'll be at Stumptown.
She will also be at Stumptown, yes.
And I think her series is Babysitter Club.
She has her own webcomic called Smile at smilecomics.com, and then she has the series of the Babysitter's Club, which are from Scholastic, part of their graphics line.
Fantastic. Tara, anything you've discovered at cons just going, wow?
I like the diversity of artists, and there's always something new that an artist that I had never heard of before that, you know, just something about it will speak to me. It's when I actually finally get the chance to actually walk around, just kind of discovering new things and new artists.
Now, I'm going to do a little discussion question. We have about 10 minutes left. Where do you kind of see comics going as a medium? Do you see change? And anyone can just chime in and feel free to discuss among each other.
Well, I think comics, people that are drawing, you know, sequential art in panels where, you know, you brought up Scott McCloud earlier, where the meta comic actually takes place between the panels in the viewer's head. I think that, you know, that's a medium that's just going to be explored, you know, more and more, and people will keep discovering new stories to tell. The actual platform that they're presented on may go from, and already has, it already has gone from the 32-page periodical pamphlet into the graphic novel and online and into the infinite canvas and all of those things. But I think that people will still continue to have something to say, and they will choose the comics medium as a way to say it. I think there will be people that will break off. I think that they will want to make things move. And I think that, you know, that's more in the realm of, you know, animation. And for some people, I think there's a bit of a blurry line there. But I think I think comics is in one of its most creative periods ever right now. I'd be hard pressed to point at another era and say, you know, it was better than this one.
All right. I would agree. It's quite amazing going to a convention and seeing just all this fantastic stuff, all these young folks just putting out these incredible minis. And it's like, how come I've never heard of you before? Well, there's, you know, another 30 people just like that, you know, down the aisles. Dave, for doing web comics, what's the difference, like, as far as, I guess, doing comics, the web comics, to print comics? Do you change it up?
I mean, it changes. I mean, a lot of it, you know, format sometimes can be a factor. I mean, what looks good on screen might not look as good on print as in terms of density and, you know, how much information you're displaying at once. But, I mean, other than, you know, my comics tend to be, I mean, I still hand draw everything and scan it. And so it's still very close to print comics in that sense. You know, the real just difference is the immediacy of audience reaction, where with print, you know, if you're doing a 24-page pamphlet, you know, there's, you know, usually a monthly schedule or bi-monthly or whatever. And, you know, so by the time from finishing the material to the time it comes out, you know, there is a divide where, and with graphic novels even more so. But with the web, you know, you can draw something and post it, you know, the minute you finish drawing it, and 2 minutes later have, you know, comments or feedback, or, you know, you can know what people think of it, you know, right away. So I think that for me is the biggest difference between working in the different mediums, because I don't really, you know, change too much about the way I work, print versus the web.
So Larry, you've got the Bean World graphic novel you're working on. When's the expected release date? Is it going to be a while?
I think it's going to be this time next year, or maybe a little bit further towards end of spring, beginning of summer, but no longer than that.
What was the want to return to the fine Bean World?
I didn't catch that.
Why did you the choice to return to Bean World?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it just started. Bean World was something that had gone dormant inside of me for a while, and as I was doing other things, and it didn't really bother me that it had gone dormant. And then one day it just basically arrived and said, I'm back, and you need to draw me. And I know that sounds goofy and pretentious, and it's really true.
When you guys are working on comics, what pushes you? Like, I know I've heard different things from some people. Like, for someone like Jaime Hernandez, he just, the comics write itself. Do you have...
We do.
Do you all kind of feel that way, that process just jumps out and you just got to do it?
I often feel like I'm channeling something from somewhere else, and it's sort of a big responsibility, but I don't know where these ideas come from.
And something like Bean World, I don't know where it would come from.
I'm just very fortunate that they come to me.
How about Tara? We haven't heard from you in a couple minutes.
And, you know, it's interesting because each project that I've worked on is subsequently longer. So I'm, you know, going from like the 4-page one that I did to the 12-page, and now jumping to like a 96-page. You know, it's interesting. It's different. I mean, I'm still like just at the beginning of Donor, but, you know, it goes through this like evolution and you know, ups and downs and like trying to maintain the like really high level of motivation and to have, I mean, for me, because I'm painting everything, you know, to have each page be just as strong as the other, it's, you know, it's hard, but it's fun and it's exciting, and I think each new page kind of re-ups it for me, like, okay, now this one, and seeing what I can do with, you know, color and texture and all these different things, and have it be a nice flow from one page to the next.
Do you find it you want to change it up a lot when you're doing such a lengthy piece, and it is, painting is so laborious?
Yeah, I'm trying. You know, I'm going to try new things and experiment with new things with working on Donor, and you know, it should be pretty cool.
And what is Donor about? Can you talk about that, or is it pretty hush hush for now?
I don't know what I can say about it, actually. It's amazing. It's a really great story. You know, honestly, I don't know what I can and can't say about it. I should ask my editor. But for now, I'm going to say nothing except that
it's fantastic.
It's really,
yeah, when in doubt,
really
always
awesome
err on
story.
The side of caution.
Dave? Or did you already mention what pushes you?
Are we talking about why we make comics, or what were you?
What pushes you? What pushes you creatively?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me, it's just fun, and I've just always enjoyed making comics. I started assembling comics in some shape or form, like as early as like 5 years old, just because of the, you know, just getting comics. I just realized really quickly that I already had paper and my parents had a stapler, and, you know, put the two together and I could draw something on that paper and make a comic. So that's just never gone away. I've always just enjoyed the process of just making little books and drawing little stories and just putting them out there and seeing what people think. And a lot of my creative choices just come down to what I would want to see in my own, you know, if I was just reading something.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my favorite cartoonists were people like Evan Dorkin, who just crammed their pages with all this like fun stuff, and just, you know, it kind of had like a repeated reading value that you could like read, you know, his comics and then, you know, go back and read them again and, you know, notice little things he wrote in the columns or in the background. And I've just always thought of my, you know, not if that I was always trying to do the same thing, but I always want my comics to feel like there's something that, you know, you're not going to just read it once and be like, you know, there's hopefully, you know, something to it.
It's like that Sergio Aragonés,
yeah,
type thing.
Yeah, I love Sergio Aragonés, a huge deal.
All fantastic boys. Well, I'm at the end of my hour, so I want to thank all three of you and Indigo, who has since hung up, for joining me. I look forward to meeting you all at Stomptown, and as well, I'd like in the future to be able to sit down with each of you for separate interviews, because you're all talented folks, and I've actually had an online, you know, listener request to who people want to listen to, and all your names have been thrown in as someone people want to see on the show. So there we go.
Well, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having
me. Thank
you. Thanks.
See you guys there.
See y'all. That was Larry Marder, Tara McPherson, and Dave Roman, all fantastic cartoonists and folks, and I look forward to meeting them. I think you should all check out their stuff. I'll have links to their websites online, inkstuds.com, as well as the Stumptown Comics Festival. Inkstuds.com, once again, CITR's radio station. I'm going to end off with another Extravagant Bachelor because, well, I'm enjoying it. So this last song is Hats in Sunny Weather. So next week, Dylan Williams. Thank you.
grandfathers, brothers, uncles, nieces, aunts, nephews.